The loudest enemy you face isn't out there in the world. It's in your own mind. It's the whisper that tells you you're not enough. The voice that replays every mistake. The shadow that turns small problems into proof that you're broken. But listen closely. You are not broken. You're simply trapped in patterns of thinking that were never meant to control you. The Stoics knew this. They lived through war, loss, betrayal, and yet they built a mindset so unshakable that no storm could destroy it. Today, you're going to learn the same discipline. 10 brutal Stoic laws that will kill your negative thinking and forge a mind that nothing and no one can break. 1. Stop arguing with reality. Every time something painful happens, the mind instantly rebels. A breakup, a rejection, a failure, it echoes in your head like a broken record. This shouldn't have happened. It wasn't supposed to be this way. And yet, here you are, lying awake at night, replaying the same moment, hoping somehow the past will change if you resist it hard enough. But reality doesn't care about your resistance. It doesn't wait for you to agree. It doesn't ask for permission. It simply is. And when you fight it, you are the one who bleeds. This is the hidden trap of negative thinking. Most of your suffering isn't from the event itself, but from your refusal to accept it. The heartbreak is real, but the belief that it shouldn't have happened, that's what poisons your peace. The failure hurts, but it's your mind saying, "I'm ruined, I'll never recover," that multiplies the pain. This is what the Stoics meant when they said, "Don't try to bend life to your will, bend your will to life." Epictetus put it bluntly, "Don't seek for events to happen as you wish, but wish for them to happen as they do happen, and your life will flow well." To many, that sounds like surrender, but it isn't surrender, it's strength. It's the wisdom of aligning yourself with truth instead of wasting energy resisting what already is. Imagine two people caught in the same storm. One screams at the sky, furious that it's raining, while the other puts on a raincoat and starts walking. Which one suffers more? The storm doesn't change for either of them, but one has turned resistance into agony, while the other has turned acceptance into clarity. Life works the same way. You cannot rewrite yesterday. You cannot unlose what has been lost. You cannot unhear the cruel words or undo the mistakes you've made. But you can decide what you do with this moment, right here, right now. That's where your power lives. The Stoics had a name for this radical acceptance, amor fati, the love of fate. It doesn't mean you celebrate misfortune like a masochist. It means you accept it as yours and you use it. If a relationship ends, instead of screaming, "This shouldn't have happened," you say, "This is my path now. I didn't choose it, but I'll use it to grow stronger." If you fail, instead of drowning in shame, you ask, "What is this here to teach me?" The pain doesn't vanish, but it transforms. It becomes fuel instead of chains. Ask yourself, how many hours, how many days of your life have you lost to replaying something you cannot change? Think of all the energy you've burned on regret, denial, and resistance. What if you reclaimed that energy? What if every ounce of it was redirected into action, into building, learning, healing, or creating? Your past would stop being a prison and start becoming a teacher. This is why the Stoics weren't broken by tragedy. They didn't deny their pain, but they refused to let pain dictate their lives. Marcus Aurelius lost children, faced betrayal, ruled during wars and plagues, and yet his words echo with peace. The impediment to action advances action. What stands in the way becomes the way. What was he saying? that the very thing you resist could become the thing that makes you, but only if you stop wasting your energy arguing with it. So here's the challenge. The next time your mind says, "This shouldn't have happened," catch it, interrupt it, remind yourself, "It did happen. Now what will I do with it?" That one shift changes everything. It moves you from victim to author, from resistance to response. And it's in that shift that transformation begins. You don't need a perfect life to find peace. You don't need every outcome to go your way. You only need the courage to face life as it is and to choose your next step with clarity. Acceptance is not weakness. It's the foundation of freedom. Because when you stop fighting the storm, you learn how to walk through it with grace. Stop arguing with reality. You'll never win that fight, and you don't need to. What you need is the wisdom to say, "This is my life, this is my fate, and I will not waste it wishing for another." From that moment, negativity loses its grip, and what's left is something unshakable, a mind that moves with life, not against it. 2. Your environment feeds your inner dialogue. Your mind is not a sealed fortress. It's a mirror, constantly reflecting what surrounds it. The thoughts that echo in your head every night, the self-doubt, the fear, the endless comparisons, they didn't appear out of nowhere. They were planted. They grew from the soil of your environment, from the people you spend time with, the voices you listen to, the spaces you live in, and the content you consume every single day. Think about it. No one is born drowning in negativity. A child doesn't come into the world believing they are unworthy. Those beliefs are absorbed slowly, silently, from the world around them. A harsh parent who constantly criticizes, a group of friends who thrive on gossip and cynicism, a culture that tells you you're never enough unless you look or live a certain way. All of these environments shape the dialogue in your head. And once those voices take root, they start to sound like your own. Seneca once said, "Associate with people who are likely to improve you. Welcome those whom you yourself can improve." This isn't just nice advice. It's survival. Because your environment is not neutral. It is either lifting you or pulling you under. If you surround yourself with constant noise, your thoughts will echo that noise. If you linger in toxic spaces filled with drama, your inner dialogue will become suspicious, anxious, and restless. If you spend hours scrolling through perfectly filtered lives on Instagram, you will start to believe you're failing, even if you're doing well. But the opposite is also true. When you place yourself among people who speak of growth, courage, and kindness, your mind begins to echo that rhythm. When your space is clean, quiet, and intentional, your thoughts settle into clarity. When you consume books, podcasts, or conversations that expand your perspective, your inner dialogue transforms. Your environment is like a sculptor, chiseling your mental landscape every single day. The question is, what shape is it carving you into? Most of us underestimate the power of our surroundings. We think we can scroll through negativity, laugh off toxic friends, or ignore the clutter in our room without consequence. But your mind is always paying attention. That messy desk, that chaotic bedroom, that constant background noise, they fragment your focus and bury your intuition. That friend who constantly complains or mocks others, they are teaching your brain a language of scarcity and judgment. Over time, these inputs become the default voice in your head, and you begin to think it's just who you are. But it isn't. It's what you've been feeding your mind. Here's a truth that might sting. You cannot kill negative thoughts while feeding them every single day. You can't expect peace if you live in an environment that thrives on chaos. The mind is like a garden. If you allow weeds of gossip, clutter, and toxicity to grow unchecked, they will overtake the soil. But if you plant seeds of wisdom, gratitude and discipline, you create a space where clarity and strength can flourish. So, how do you begin? Start small. Clean your room. Yes, literally. A cluttered space reflects and reinforces a cluttered mind. Curate your social media feeds. Unfollow accounts that fuel your insecurity and fill them instead with content that inspires and strengthens you. Set boundaries with people who drain your energy, even if that means spending more time alone until you find better company. Choose conversations that build, not destroy. The Stoics didn't just talk about wisdom in theory. They practiced it by curating their lives with discipline. They structured their routines, minimized distractions, and surrounded themselves with meaningful company. Not because they were cold, but because they understood this simple truth. What surrounds you enters you, and once it enters you, it becomes the voice that guides your choices. Imagine giving yourself 7 days of intentional environment. For 1 week, cut out gossip. Stop doom-scrolling through negativity. Organize your space so it feels calm and clear. Read something that nourishes your mind every night before sleep. Spend time, even just an hour, with someone who speaks of ideas instead of complaints. Watch what happens. At first, you'll feel restless because your mind craves the chaos it's addicted to. But soon, you'll notice something powerful. Your thoughts grow quieter. Your self-talk grows kinder. Your focus sharpens, not because negativity magically disappeared, but because you stopped feeding it. Ask yourself right now, who drains me? Who strengthens me? Does my space make me feel calm or restless? What content leaves me inspired, and what content leaves me feeling small? These questions are not small. They are the foundation of your mental clarity. The Stoics believed wisdom wasn't just about philosophy. It was about design. Designing your habits, your choices, your environment in a way that protects your mind. Because your mind is the battlefield, and your environment determines what weapons you bring to the fight. So, take responsibility for the world you place yourself in. Build spaces, habits, and relationships that heal instead of harm. Because the environment you choose today will become the voice you live with tomorrow. And when you choose well, that voice becomes your greatest ally, not your greatest enemy. 3. You are not your thoughts. There's a voice in your head that never seems to stop talking. Last night it might have told you, I'm not enough, I'll fail, I'm broken. And maybe, because it was so loud and so relentless, a part of you started to believe it. But here's a truth most people never hear. You are not your thoughts. Read that again. You are not the constant chatter in your mind. You are the one listening. We grow up believing that every thought that crosses our mind must mean something, that it's evidence of who we are. If we think, I'm worthless, we assume it's a fact. If we think, everyone hates me, we assume it must be true. But thoughts are not reality. They are impressions, guesses, fragments of memory and emotion, shaped by fatigue, fear, and past pain. They are suggestions, not verdicts. And if you confuse them for truth, you will end up living in a prison built from illusions. The Stoics understood this thousands of years ago. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "You have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find strength." Notice what he's saying. He doesn't say you have power over your thoughts. Thoughts come and go, often without your permission. He says you have power over your mind, the way you relate to those thoughts, the way you choose to respond to them. That is where freedom lives. Think of your mind like the sky. Your thoughts are the clouds. Some are bright and light, drifting peacefully. Others are heavy, dark storms. But no matter how fierce the storm, the sky is never the storm. It holds it, witnesses it, and then clears again. In the same way, you are not the storm of your thoughts. You are the awareness holding them. And when you remember that, you stop being tossed around by every dark cloud that passes. One practical way to reclaim this truth is to change your language. Instead of saying, "I am a failure," say, "I'm having a thought that I'm a failure." That tiny shift creates distance. Suddenly, the thought is no longer fused with your identity. It's just something passing through your mind. You can observe it, question it, and let it go. Another way is to treat your thoughts like evidence in a courtroom. When your mind says, "No one cares about me," stop and ask, "Is this 100% true? Where is the evidence? What would a Stoic say about this? Will this even matter in 5 years? Most of the time, you'll find that your mind is exaggerating, distorting, or simply lying to you. When you expose the lie, the thought loses its grip. Modern psychology calls this cognitive distancing, but the Stoics practiced it long before. Epictetus taught that we are disturbed not by events, but by the opinions we form about them. Your thoughts are opinions, not facts, and you have the power to challenge them. Here's a metaphor to carry with you. Your mind is like a radio, constantly broadcasting different stations. Some play songs of hope, others play noise of fear. Just because a station is playing doesn't mean you have to sing along. You can listen, notice, and then change the station. The power is not in silencing the radio, it's in choosing which broadcast you will live by. But this doesn't mean you ignore your thoughts completely. Thoughts are signals. They can reveal wounds, desires, fears that need attention. The difference is learning to listen without obeying. When anger surges, you notice it without letting it control your tongue. When insecurity whispers, you acknowledge it without letting it dictate your choices. You become the master of the dialogue, not its servant. Imagine how much freedom this gives you. The thought says, "You can't handle this." But instead of collapsing, you say, "That's just a thought. Let me see what happens when I try." The thought says, "You're unworthy of love." But instead of believing it, you remind yourself, "This is a cloud, not the sky. It will pass." The thought says, "Everything is falling apart." But you breathe and say, "That's just my mind talking. Let me focus on the next step I can take." Every time you do this, you weaken the chains of negative thinking. You stop living as if your mind is a tyrant and start living as if your mind is a tool, something to be sharpened, guided, and used with discipline. That is the Stoic path. Not to eradicate thoughts, but to rise above them. So remember this, you are not the voice in your head. You are the awareness behind it. You are not the storm. You are the mountain it crashes against, and no storm has ever destroyed the mountain. When you let this truth sink in, negativity loses its power. Because thoughts will come, they will go, they will change 1,000 times. But you, your core, your essence, remain steady. And that steadiness is where real strength is born. 4. Let death sharpen your focus. Most people live as if the clock will never run out. They postpone their dreams. They waste days on arguments, distractions, and petty worries, as if they have an infinite supply of tomorrows waiting in the bank. But the truth the Stoics never let themselves forget, is that life is brutally short. Tomorrow is not promised, and when you forget this, you begin to drift. You spend your time on things that don't matter, and your mind drowns in negativity because it clings to what is trivial instead of what is essential. The Stoics had a phrase, "Memento mori," remember that you will die. At first it sounds dark, even morbid, but it's not a call to despair, it's a call to live. Because when you remember death, you remember what matters. You cut through the noise and see life with sharper eyes. Suddenly the cruel comment from someone else doesn't feel so heavy. If you had only a week to live, would that insult still matter? Would the traffic jam, the delayed reply, the argument over something small still deserve your peace? Of course not. And that's the gift of remembering mortality. It shrinks the unimportant and magnifies the meaningful. Marcus Aurelius, a man who ruled an empire while facing wars, betrayal, and loss, wrote, "You could leave life right now. Let that determine what you do and say and think." He wasn't obsessed with death, he was obsessed with clarity. He knew that once you face the reality of your limited time, you stop wasting it. You stop waiting to love. You stop waiting to speak your truth. You stop waiting to live. Think about your own life. How many times have you held back? How many times have you said, "I'll start tomorrow, I'll fix it later, I'll chase that dream one day"? But one day is an illusion. You are not guaranteed even the rest of today. And if that feels uncomfortable, good, it should. Because discomfort wakes you up. It shakes you out of autopilot. When you let death sharpen your focus, you stop hoarding your love. You tell the people who matter to you how much they mean. Today, not someday. You forgive faster, not because they deserve it, but because your peace deserves it. You let go of grudges, because why spend your limited days carrying bitterness like a stone in your chest? You put your attention where it belongs, on what gives life meaning. This doesn't mean living recklessly. It doesn't mean chasing pleasure like tomorrow doesn't exist. The Stoics weren't hedonists. They were realists. They knew that if life is short, then every moment is sacred. Every choice is weighty. Every sunrise is a gift, not a guarantee. And when you see it that way, you live differently. Imagine waking each morning with the thought, "I may not get this day again." Suddenly, scrolling aimlessly feels empty. Complaining feels like a waste. Procrastination feels like betrayal. Instead, you want to pour your attention into something that matters. You want to create, to grow, to connect, to live with intention. The negativity that clutters your mind often comes from believing you have unlimited time to indulge it. You think you can afford to waste a day sulking, obsessing over what someone said, or replaying the past. But when you accept that time is the most fragile resource you have, you stop giving it away so carelessly. You stop letting negativity steal days you will never get back. Ask yourself this: if I had 1 year left to live, what would I stop worrying about? If I had 1 week, what would I start doing immediately? If I had 1 day, who would I spend it with, and how would I treat them? These questions cut through the fog. They strip away excuses. They bring you face to face with what actually matters. The Stoics knew that death is not an enemy. It's a teacher. It teaches urgency without desperation. It teaches gratitude without complacency. It teaches you that life isn't measured by how long you live, but by how deeply you live while you have the chance. So let death sharpen your focus. Let it be the lens that reveals what truly deserves your energy. Live with urgency, not panic. Live with clarity, not fear. Live with love, not bitterness, because every single day you're alive is a chance to become the person you were meant to be, not someday, but now. Remember this truth: you will die. But if you live with that awareness, you will also finally live. 5. Choose virtue, not validation. How many hours of your life have you wasted worrying about what other people think of you? How many nights have you replayed a conversation, analyzing every word, every silence, wondering if they liked you, if they judged you, if they secretly disapproved? This endless hunger for validation is one of the greatest traps of the human mind. It drains your peace, it warps your choices, and it keeps you chained to the shifting opinions of others. But the Stoics offered a radical alternative. Stop chasing validation and start living by virtue. The difference is profound. Validation depends on the crowd. Virtue depends on you. Validation is fickle. Today they praise you. Tomorrow they condemn you. But virtue is steady, unshakable, rooted in values that do not change with the wind. When you live for validation, your identity becomes fragile. Every smile lifts you. Every criticism breaks you. But when you live for virtue, you stand on solid ground. Whether people cheer or mock, whether they understand or reject you, you remain unbroken because you know who you are. Epictetus, who began life as a slave and rose to become one of history's great philosophers, put it bluntly, "If you want to improve, be content to be thought foolish and stupid." At first, those words sting. Who wants to be thought foolish? But Epictetus was pointing to a deeper truth. If your goal is wisdom, growth, and character, then you cannot make public approval your compass. True greatness requires the courage to look wrong in the eyes of those who don't understand your path. Think about it. Some of the wisest and most impactful people in history were ridiculed in their time. Socrates was mocked. Galileo was condemned. Marcus Aurelius himself faced criticism as emperor. Yet they stood firm, guided not by applause, but by principle. Their lives remind us the opinions of others are temporary, but virtue, living with honesty, courage, discipline, and kindness, echoes long after. Validation feels good in the moment, but it makes you weak in the long run. It teaches you to compromise your values for approval. It tempts you to bend your truth to avoid conflict. It whispers, "Just be what they want, so you'll be liked." But here's the brutal reality. No matter how hard you try, you will never win universal approval. Someone will always misunderstand you, dislike you, criticize you, and if your peace depends on their acceptance, you will always live at the mercy of strangers. Virtue frees you from that slavery. When you anchor your life to virtue, you ask one simple question in every situation. Am I being true to my values? Not, do they approve of me? Not, does this make me look good? But am I living with integrity, honesty, and courage? That is the Stoic way. And once you choose it, you become untouchable. This doesn't mean being arrogant or dismissive. It doesn't mean ignoring feedback or refusing to grow. It means filtering every voice through the lens of your principles. If someone criticizes you, and they're right, you adjust, not because you crave their validation, but because you value truth. If someone mocks you unfairly, you let it pass, not because it doesn't sting, but because you value peace over petty battles. Either way, your response is rooted in virtue, not in ego. Here's a practical exercise. Write down your three core virtues, the principles you refuse to compromise, no matter what. Maybe it's honesty, maybe courage, maybe discipline, maybe compassion. Keep them where you can see them every morning. Let them guide your choices. When someone doubts you, instead of asking, "Why don't they like me?" ask, "Did I act according to my virtues?" If the answer is yes, then you've already won, no matter what anyone else thinks. Remember this, people's opinions are like the weather. They shift constantly, warm one day, cold the next. If you live for them, you'll be tossed around like a ship without an anchor. But if you live by virtue, You become the anchor. You become steady in a stormy sea. So ask yourself, are you chasing approval or are you living by principle? The first path will exhaust you. The second will set you free. Because validation may feel sweet for a moment, but virtue builds a life that lasts. And when your final day comes, it won't matter who clapped for you or who criticized you. What will matter is whether you lived true to yourself, with courage, with integrity, with virtue. Choose virtue, not validation. That's where true freedom begins. 6. The stories you tell yourself are creating your pain. It's not the events of life that break you. It's the stories you attach to them. Think about it. Rejection, failure, loss. These happen to everyone. They hurt, yes, but the real wound comes afterward, when your mind starts spinning a narrative that magnifies the pain until it feels unbearable. Someone doesn't text you back, and your brain whispers, "I'm not important. I'll always be alone." You make a mistake at work, and suddenly the thought creeps in, "I'm incompetent. I'll never succeed." These are not facts. They are stories, crafted, exaggerated, repeated until they carve themselves into your identity. Marcus Aurelius once said, "If you are pained by any external thing, it is not this thing that disturbs you, but your estimate of it." That line is more than philosophy. It's a survival skill. The problem is not what happened, it's the meaning you've given it. The event is neutral. It's your interpretation that makes it destructive. And the tragic part is, most people never stop to question their stories. They take them as truth. And then they live as if those lies are reality. Consider this. Two people face the same setback. Say they both lose their jobs. One tells himself, "This is the end. I'm worthless. No one will hire me again." He spirals into despair, not because of the event itself, but because of the meaning he attached to it. The other tells himself, "This is painful, but maybe it's a chance to reset, to find something better aligned with who I am." He still feels the sting, but he moves forward with strength. Same event, two different stories, two radically different lives. This is why the Stoics practiced separating event from story. It's an act of clarity, a way to strip away the emotional fog so you can see what's really happening. The practice is simple, though not easy. First, write down the raw fact. My message wasn't answered for 2 days. Then, write down the story your mind is telling. They're ignoring me. They don't care. Finally, question that story. Is this definitely true? Could there be another reason? That gap, that pause where you question your mind, is where freedom begins. Because here's the truth. Your mind is not impartial. It's colored by past wounds, by old fears, by insecurities you've never faced. A late reply might trigger memories of abandonment. A harsh comment might echo childhood criticism. Without awareness, these ghosts hijack your thinking, and you end up bleeding from old wounds every time something new happens. But when you pause, when you separate fact from story, you expose the ghost for what it is, a shadow, not reality. So how do you break free from the stories that are hurting you? Start by becoming the editor of your mind. When a painful narrative arises, don't accept the first draft. Challenge it. Rewrite it. Remind yourself, this is a thought, not the truth. This is a story, not a fact. Over time, this practice rewires your brain. It teaches you to hold your thoughts lightly, to treat them as drafts rather than verdicts. And with each rewrite, the grip of negativity weakens. This doesn't mean you sugarcoat everything or lie to yourself with empty positivity. Stoicism is not about pretending pain doesn't exist. It's about facing it without adding unnecessary suffering. When life knocks you down, you don't say, "This is great, I love it." You say, "This hurts, but it doesn't define me. I choose what it means." That choice, that act of reframing, is the difference between being broken by life and being forged by it. Ask yourself, what story am I telling about my current struggle? Is it a story of defeat, or is it a story of growth? Am I the victim of my circumstances, or am I the protagonist who rises through them? These aren't small questions. They shape the entire trajectory of your life, because the story you repeat becomes the life you live. Think of every setback as raw material, like clay. The event itself is neutral. What matters is how you shape it. Do you twist it into a weapon against yourself, or do you mold it into something that strengthens you? The Stoics would say, don't waste your suffering. Use it. Shape it. Let it make you wiser, calmer, more resilient. The truth is, you cannot always control what happens to you. People will still leave. Opportunities will still slip away. Life will still hand you losses. But you can always control the story you tell yourself about those losses. And when you take that power seriously, you reclaim your peace. So the next time you feel crushed, pause. Write down the fact. Then write down the story. And then ask, do I want to keep living inside this story, or will I write a better one? That single choice could be the difference between despair and resilience, between defeat and victory. Remember this, the pain is real, but the story is optional. And when you choose the right story, you choose freedom. 7. Gratitude kills negativity. Negativity thrives in the soil of lack. It grows strongest when your mind is focused only on what you don't have, on what went wrong, on what could go wrong tomorrow. That tunnel vision suffocates you until every small inconvenience feels like proof that life is against you. But the Stoics discovered a weapon sharper than despair, one that cuts through the roots of negativity every time it appears. Gratitude. Gratitude is not about denying pain. It's not about forcing a smile and saying everything is fine when it clearly isn't. Gratitude is not naive optimism, it's discipline. It's the practice of dragging your mind out of the shadows of what's missing and planting it firmly in the light of what's here. It doesn't erase suffering, but it transforms how suffering touches you. Seneca once wrote, "It is not the man who has too little, but the man who craves more that is poor." That single sentence reveals why negativity eats away at so many lives. We forget what we already have, so all we can see is what's missing. We crave endlessly, compare relentlessly, and in that craving we feel poor, even when our hands are already full. Gratitude breaks that illusion. It shifts your eyes to what is already in front of you and says, "This matters. This is enough." Think about how negativity works. Problems feel urgent. They demand your attention. They drag you into their orbit until you see nothing else. You lose perspective. A rude comment online consumes your mind. A small mistake at work ruins your whole day. But gratitude interrupts that spiral. It cracks the tunnel vision. It forces you to step back and see the bigger picture. Suddenly, the rude comment is just one drop in a vast ocean of kindness you've experienced. The mistake is just one moment in a lifetime of progress. Gratitude doesn't erase the problem, but it changes the battlefield you're fighting on. And sometimes, that change in terrain is all you need to win. There is also courage hidden inside gratitude. To be grateful in the middle of suffering is not denial, it's defiance. It's standing in the storm and saying, "Yes, this hurts, but I refuse to let it blind me to what is still good. That choice doesn't erase pain, but it strengthens you against it. Gratitude is proof that even in darkness, you can choose to see light. The opposite of gratitude isn't anger or sadness, it's forgetfulness. When you forget the battles you've already survived, the blessings you've already received, the people who've stood by your side, negativity finds its perfect breeding ground. That's why gratitude must be a daily ritual, because forgetfulness is natural, but remembering requires effort. Start small. Each morning, write down 3 things you're grateful for. They don't have to be dramatic. A warm meal, a deep breath, the sound of rain against the window, a friend who texted to check in. These little anchors seem insignificant, but when life's storms hit, and they will, they keep you from being swept away. Gratitude is the rope you hold onto when the waves of negativity try to pull you under. Modern neuroscience confirms what the Stoics practiced. Studies show that gratitude literally rewires the brain, shifting your focus toward positive emotions, lowering stress, and increasing resilience. But the Stoics didn't need brain scans to know this. They lived it. They understood that the mind can be trained like a muscle, and gratitude was one of their sharpest tools. Ask yourself right now, what in my life is good that I've been ignoring? Who has shown me kindness that I haven't thanked? What do I have today that I once prayed for? These questions shift the lens instantly. They remind you that you are not empty-handed, no matter how heavy your burdens feel. Gratitude doesn't make life perfect, but it makes life livable. It creates space for joy, even in suffering. It gives you perspective when negativity narrows your vision. And most importantly, it reminds you that you already have strength, resources, and blessings you can build from. So practice it deliberately. Write it, speak it, live it. Not as a cliché, but as a weapon. Because negativity cannot survive long in the presence of gratitude. One star is enough to break the darkness of the night sky. One genuine moment of thankfulness is enough to weaken the grip of despair. Gratitude kills negativity, not by pretending life is flawless, but by proving life is still worth living, even with its flaws. 8. You're tired, not broken. There are nights when you lie awake dissecting every thought, every decision, every flaw, convinced there must be something deeply wrong with you. You replay mistakes, you magnify insecurities, and slowly you start believing the lie. I'm broken. I'm weak. I'll never be enough. But here's the truth, no one tells you. Most of the time, you're not broken at all. You're just tired. Fatigue is one of the most deceptive enemies of the mind. It puts on the mask of failure. When you are drained, physically, emotionally, spiritually, your perspective twists. Small problems look enormous. Neutral comments sound like insults. A simple delay feels like rejection. Exhaustion doesn't just sap your energy. It rewires your perception, turning shadows into monsters. And because you can't see clearly, you start to assume the problem must be you. But the truth is, you're not weak, you're weary. And there's a world of difference between the two. Think about how your body works. A field cannot produce crops if it is never allowed to rest. Muscles cannot grow stronger if they are torn without recovery. In the same way, your mind cannot function with clarity if you never give it the stillness it craves. But in a culture that glorifies productivity, we confuse exhaustion with failure. We run ourselves into the ground, then wonder why we feel worthless when all that's happening is our system begging for rest. The Stoics understood the importance of rhythm, of balance. Marcus Aurelius himself wrote in his Meditations about the value of retreat. Stepping back, even briefly, to return to the self. They knew that rest was not indulgence, but discipline, a strategy to preserve clarity and strength. To deny yourself rest is to sabotage your own mind. How many times have you spiraled into negative thoughts late at night, only to wake up the next morning with a clearer perspective? That's not magic, it's rest. Fatigue was whispering lies, but sleep dissolved their power. And yet, instead of honoring our exhaustion, we pile on more self-criticism. Why am I so weak? Why can't I handle this? We turn tiredness into a judgment on our worth, when in reality it's just a signal, an alarm reminding us we've given too much for too long without replenishing ourselves. So here's the shift. Stop declaring war on your mind every time you feel low. Stop treating negative thoughts as proof you are broken. Instead, ask yourself, am I simply exhausted? Because often, the solution isn't to analyze harder or fight stronger, it's to rest. To walk outside for 20 minutes without your phone, to eat a meal slowly and actually taste it, to close your eyes and sleep early, even if the world insists there's more to do. Rest is not weakness. Rest is preparation. It is the pause that makes the action possible. A warrior who never rests collapses long before the battle ends. A mind that never slows down will mistake every shadow for a threat. If you want strength, discipline, resilience, you must first give yourself recovery. Practical steps matter here. When your thoughts feel tangled, write them down before bed, instead of carrying them into your sleep. When your body feels heavy, honor it with movement and nourishment, not punishment. When your spirit feels drained, step away from screens and noise and sit in silence, even for a few minutes. These small acts are not luxuries, they are survival. And here's what you must hold on to. Being tired is temporary. Being broken suggests permanence, but fatigue is just a state, one that can be changed with rest and care. Don't mistake your exhaustion for evidence that you're weak. Even the strongest warriors put down their swords to recover. Even the Stoics who taught discipline understood the value of retreat. So the next time your mind tells you you're failing, pause. Ask, am I broken? Or am I just tired? Give yourself the grace to rest before you judge yourself. Because clarity rarely comes from overthinking. It comes from renewal. You are not broken. You are not beyond repair. You are human. And like every human, you need rest to return to strength. When you honor that truth, negativity loses one of its sharpest weapons. Because once you recover, you see clearly. Again. You realize the storm in your mind was never proof of your weakness. It was only the echo of your exhaustion. Remember this, tired is not forever. Broken is a lie. Strength will return, but only if you allow yourself the rest to reclaim it. 9. Don't trust the first emotion. How many regrets in your life were born not from careful choices, but from instant reactions? The harsh words you wish you hadn't said, the text you regret sending, the decisions you made in the heat of anger, fear, or jealousy that later looked foolish under the calm light of reason. This is the danger of the first emotion. It arrives suddenly, raw and unfiltered, and if you trust it as truth, it can wreck your peace and your relationships in a matter of seconds. Most people assume their first emotion is authentic, even wise. Anger feels like justice. Jealousy feels like truth. Fear feels like certainty. But the Stoics knew better. They called it mastery over impressions, the discipline of refusing to accept your first emotional reaction as reality. Marcus Aurelius reminded himself constantly, "If you are distressed by anything external, it is not the thing itself that troubles you, but your judgment of it." The first emotion is not a verdict, it's a spark, and if you treat it as fire, it will burn everything in its path. Think of emotions like waves crashing against the shore. The first wave is often the strongest. It knocks you off balance, it feels overwhelming, it threatens to drag you under. But if you stand your ground and wait, the wave always recedes. The sea grows calm again. In the same way, the first rush of emotion may be powerful, but it is temporary. If you can pause, just for a breath, a moment, you create space between the spark and the flame. In that space lives your freedom. Consider a simple example. You send a message to a friend, and hours pass without a reply. The first emotion is insecurity. They don't care about me. They're ignoring me. The story writes itself in your head, filling in gaps with rejection and betrayal. But the reality, maybe their phone died, maybe they're busy, maybe nothing is wrong at all. If you trust the first emotion, you risk damaging the relationship over an illusion. If you wait, clarity usually reveals itself. This is why the Stoics practice the pause. They trained themselves to respond not at the peak of emotion, but after it settled. Epictetus advised, "If you are ever tempted to look for approval from someone else, know that you have compromised your own integrity. Be content to be a master of yourself." Mastery of self begins with mastering that first flash of feeling. It means telling yourself, "Let me wait before I react." It sounds simple, but it can save friendships, careers, marriages, and most importantly, your peace of mind. Think about anger. In the moment, it feels righteous, unstoppable. But how many angry words have left scars you could never erase? Think about fear. At first strike, it convinces you to run, to avoid, to quit. But how many opportunities were lost because you obeyed the first tremor of anxiety instead of waiting for calm? The first emotion is not your enemy, but it is not your guide. It is a signal, not a command. So how do you practice this in daily life? Start with awareness. The next time a strong emotion hits, label it. This is anger. This is fear. This is jealousy. By naming it, you create distance between you and the feeling. Then, breathe. Literally, take 3 deep breaths before speaking, before acting, before deciding. That small pause often weakens the grip of the first emotion long enough for reason to return. If you can, delay your response. Write the angry message, but don't send it. Sleep on the decision. Return when the wave has passed. More often than not, you'll thank yourself. This discipline doesn't mean suppressing emotions. The Stoics weren't stone walls. They felt deeply, but they refused to let emotions dictate their actions. They understood that reacting to the first impression is slavery, while pausing to choose your response is freedom. And freedom is the goal. Freedom from regret, from impulsive mistakes, from the roller coaster of being pulled in every direction by feelings that shift like the wind. Ask yourself this: what would my life look like if I paused before every major reaction? How many conflicts would I have avoided? How many mistakes would I have spared myself? How much more peace would I feel if I trusted clarity over impulse? These questions aren't hypothetical. They are the difference between a life ruled by chaos and a life ruled by wisdom. So the next time your heart pounds, your face heats, your chest tightens, remember, this is the first emotion. It will pass. You don't have to obey it. You don't have to treat it as truth. You can wait. You can breathe. You can choose. That choice is the mark of strength. That choice is what makes you unshakable. Don't trust the first emotion. Trust the calm after. That's where wisdom speaks. 10. Detach from what you cannot control. One of the greatest sources of human misery is the obsession with control. We want people to act the way we expect, circumstances to unfold according to our plans, the world to bend itself around our desires. And when it doesn't, when people disappoint us, when life throws curveballs, when the future refuses to obey our blueprint, we collapse into frustration, anger, and despair. But here's the stoic truth, simple yet brutal. Most of life is not within your control. And the sooner you accept this, the freer you become. Think about how much time you've wasted trying to control the uncontrollable. You worry about whether people like you. You stress over what others will say. You replay the past as if endless analysis might change it. You obsess about the future as if fear could bend it into shape. Every ounce of energy spent this way is stolen from the only arena you actually control. Your own actions, your own choices, your own character. Epictetus drew the line clearly. Some things are up to us and some are not. That was his starting point for freedom, up to us, our judgments, our intentions, our words, our actions, not up to us, the behavior of others, the outcome of our efforts, the passage of time, the turning of fate. Misery comes when we blur the line. Strength comes when we accept it. Imagine holding a rope tied to a wild horse. You pull and pull, demanding that the animal walk your path, but it drags you through the mud. You're exhausted, angry, humiliated. Then imagine letting go of the rope. The horse runs where it wants, and suddenly you are free to walk your own road. That is what it feels like to detach from what you cannot control. You stop being dragged by forces outside your command, and you reclaim the power to direct yourself. This doesn't mean indifference or apathy. It doesn't mean you stop caring about people or outcomes. It means you stop clinging. You love, but without demanding to own. You work, but without needing a guaranteed result. You plan, but without expecting the universe to obey. Detachment is not coldness, it is clarity. It is the recognition that your peace cannot depend on variables you do not command. Think about relationships. How many arguments are fueled by the desire to change someone else? You demand they understand you, validate you, act exactly as you wish, and when they don't, you feel unloved. But their choices are not yours to control. What is yours? The way you communicate, the boundaries you set, the love you give. That's where your freedom lives. Or think about ambition. You work hard, but you cannot control the market, the timing, or the recognition you receive. Obsessing over those outcomes breeds anxiety. Focusing on your effort, your discipline, your persistence, that breeds peace. Here's the paradox. The moment you stop trying to control what you cannot, you actually gain more influence over your life. Why? Because your energy is no longer wasted on the impossible. It's concentrated where it counts. Instead of trying to bend the weather, you learn to set your sails. Instead of trying to control others, you master yourself. And mastery of self is the only real power you'll ever have. So how do you practice this? Start with awareness. When you feel anxious, ask yourself, am I worrying about something within my control or outside it? If it's within, act. Take the step, make the change. If it's outside, release it. Literally say to yourself, not mine to control. Write down the difference between the two in your journal every morning until the habit sticks. Over time, you'll notice your mental clutter thinning, your focus sharpening, your peace returning. Marcus Aurelius, who had more power than almost anyone in history, reminded himself daily, you have power over your mind, not outside events. Even an emperor with armies at his command knew this truth. You cannot dictate life, but you can always dictate yourself. Ask yourself this now, How much of your pain comes not from what happened, but from your refusal to accept that it was never yours to command? How much of your stress comes from clinging to outcomes you were never meant to own? What would your life look like if you finally let go of the rope and chose instead to master what is truly yours? Detachment is not giving up. It is taking back your freedom. It is choosing to stand tall, no matter what storms rage outside you. And when you learn this discipline, negativity loses one of its sharpest claws. Because nothing outside you has the power to chain you. Not people, not outcomes, not fate itself. Only you can give them that power. Detach from what you cannot control. Anchor yourself in what you can. And you will discover what the Stoics called true freedom. The freedom of a mind that cannot be shaken, no matter what life takes away. You've just walked through 10 brutal Stoic laws. 10 weapons against the chains of negativity. They're not soft comforts. They're meant to shake you awake, to strip away illusions, and to rebuild your mind into something unbreakable. Because life will test you. Storms will come, people will fail you, and plans will collapse. But none of these can destroy you unless you hand them that power. These laws are not just ideas. They are a blueprint. A way of living that takes you from chaos to clarity, from despair to resilience. They won't erase pain, but they will give you something greater, the strength to walk through pain without losing yourself. That's the Stoic way, not a life without storms, but a mind that remains steady within them. So don't just listen, practice. Apply even one of these laws today. Remind yourself, I don't argue with reality. I'm tired, not broken. I don't trust the first emotion. Each time you live these truths, you weaken the grip of negativity and strengthen the discipline of an unshakable mind. Because in the end, your mind is your greatest weapon. Protect it, train it, master it. And when you do, you'll find a peace the world cannot give and cannot take away.